You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I was really hoping that on the retirement of Serena Williams, who you can give GOAT status to, even as we agreed yesterday, that there are too many GOATs out there and you're giving it away too freely and we've got to knock it off.
You're allowing this one?
Well, we can describe her as GOAT without dilution or reservation. I was hoping that we'd start here with Ron McGill asking questions about ridiculousness.
About actual goats,
mm-hmm. Correct. But because I wanted to talk about Serena Williams and because Howard Bryant knows tennis, I can say this more than anybody I know, Howard Bryant knows tennis. I want to talk to him about this so that he can put it in perspective for us. But Mike Ryan has been distracted by something that will also titillate Howard Bryant because we were talking about Edwin Diaz's entrance for the Mets. And how great the music is. And you're old enough to remember Lee Smith's Saunter and a bunch of other things that came out of the bullpen that were the coolest. But Mike Ryan has back there, he just happened upon something, the Vince Scully call of the Kirk Gibson home run.
So I started looking up Dennis Eckersley entrance theme, and he came out to George Thurgood's Bad to the Bone. And I remember that I actually recently watched a Dennis Eckersley game because of the passing of Vin Scully. ESPN played that game in full, the Oakland A's LA Dodgers World Series game that Kirk Gibson heroically comes on to pinch hit and does like the lawnmower yes thing. I watched most of that broadcast, and there was a really hysterical part of that broadcast, by the way, that I couldn't believe didn't get seized on by Twitter, in which they're talking about Jose Canseco and steroid allegations from other people around baseball. And there is canned video of him pregame talking to the reporters, so upset that he even has to deal with it, dismissing it out of hand. How could you allege this stuff? Not true whatsoever. Vin Scully called that game so beautifully, as he did everything. And I really hope, if anything, with it becoming a viral thing and him trending on Twitter, people could dip back into some of his great calls because he is, quite frankly, the greatest to ever do it.
How did you like Jose Canseco the way that he swung in that series?
I could not believe. And I remember Jose Canseco playing baseball, especially like older, even bigger Jose Canseco having monster seasons with the Rays and Blue Jays inexplicably, or so we thought. I have never in my life seen a more powerful swing. He struck out.
Sheffield?
He swung out of his shoes.
No, he was crazy. Anyways, Howard, let's get you in here. What is the coolest entrance? You've covered baseball in New York for a long time. Is Edwin Diaz entering the conversation with some of these other Enter Sandman, Mariano Rivera, and some of the coolest things that come out of a bullpen?
Okay, so I am covering the Oakland A's in 1999. I'm my second year in the beat. I'm walking around the grounds with Billy Bean, the general manager, and he looks at me and he says, "Alex Rodriguez is the greatest shortstop in the history of the game right now." And I said, "He's in his third season." And he said, "Doesn't matter." Therefore, along those lines, this is the greatest entrance of all time right now. Better than all of them.
Whoa. When you
Howard, stop Whoa. It. Do it in the postseason, Howard. Enough.
Listen, come into trumpets. Show me somebody else. There's only one thing I thought of, and that was Julio Cesar Chavez getting ready for a fight, listening to like the Mexican national anthem. I mean, you got to throw down when you're that. When you come into trumpets, you are ready to throw down. Now, is he going to be good enough in the playoffs and the rest of
Thank
it to
you.
Live to trumpets? But goodness, if you come into trumpets, show me somebody else.
Oh, who I will.
Bold to do that.
Howard, you're off base. It's not even the best trumpet entrance. I pose to you, John Cena.
No, I'm talking baseball. Maybe somebody else.
Oh, baseball. You're changing the rules. You go boxing. Now it's just exclusive to baseball. John Cena is the best trumpet entrance, period.
He's been badgered into submission. I want to talk to him about what's going on too with HBO Max and the Marvel Universe and everything that's happening there. But before we do any more of that, you saw Will Smith and everything that happened around what was supposed to be the graceful coronation of Serena Williams in film. And you now see in Vogue magazine, she is announcing her retirement, U.S. Open. You explain it to somebody who you are someone who really loves tennis. What is retiring right now?
Well, I mean, you can make, if you want to do the whole historical goats, and there are a lot of goats out there. But I mean, to me, for the last 10 years, you're looking at the signature face of the sport. And at least, especially in the women's game, but maybe in both. I mean, obviously, you've got the big three on the other side. But you really haven't seen that level of singular dominance. Everybody else has had rivals. Steffi Graf had rivals, even though she's got 22 majors. You know, Martina and Chrissy did their thing. They've got rivals, you know, the Bird and Magic thing. But Serena just stomped everybody. I mean, really, when you're looking at that sort of singular dominance of somebody coming in, 2012 French Open, she goes in, she loses to Ginny Rosano in the first round, and people are like, oh my God, she's done. And then she absolutely demolishes the field for the next 8 years. And it's just, it's unprecedented in a lot of ways, especially in the Open era, where you're supposed to compete with a lot of other great players like everybody else has. And she just, you know, not only did she separate herself on the court, but this is one of the things that I had real issues with, even though I know you guys are really big football guys. I hate parity. I really don't like parity. I'm not here for parity. I'm here for dominance. I'm not here for your 8-8 bullshit where, you know, everybody gets a chance to make the playoffs every 5 years. Give me the best. Serena walked out there and she whooped ass on everybody, you know, and that to me is what it's all about. I want to see somebody come out there and face down everybody, every challenge, every time. And even when they lose, there's something powerful about the loss. And Serena, not having Serena on the stage is really going to diminish. I know we're talking about Naomi Osaka, and we're talking about, you know, Bianca Andreescu, and talking about Iga Swiatek and the rest of them. It's Serena Williams' game, and it's going to be a long time before somebody else really steps in. She's got 23 majors. Osaka's got 4. And people were trying to talk about Osaka as some sort of heir to the throne. I mean, she's the best. And that's why we're here to watch. That's what I want to watch.
You know sports excellence. You also know sports toughness. You know the belly of the beast. You know how grueling some of this stuff is. Place in a context for us the understanding of her longevity in that sport that eats its young and is really feels abusive to me in terms of stealing childhoods.
You can say is abusive. I mean, Serena Williams didn't even go to school. I mean, she was essentially homeschooled, and she went to classes on the tennis court. So you want to talk about taking everything. All I'm going to say to you about Serena Williams when it comes to that question, Dan, she went pro in 95. It's 27 years ago. I mean, she's been a professional athlete since 1995, and her sister Venus went pro the year before, 94. So she's been on the main stage for 27 years. And when you think about it, she's been a pro longer than her rivals right now have been alive. And that is something that you don't really get in a lot of sports. Maybe periodically you'll get a Tom Brady or somebody like that, but it's really, or Nolan Ryan, it's really, really hard to do. And to do it in that sport. And this is also, you know, Serena is one of the first members of this new generation where you can continue to win in your 30s. Most players are out of there by their mid-20s. The game just burns them out. We just saw Ashley Barty retire. She's not even 30. And we're seeing it everywhere. But Serena, the toughness, it's not just the toughness, it's the desire to continue to compete when – in that sport, you don't have teammates. You don't have really coaching. You don't have timeouts. the mental brain power of trying to play that sport where eventually most players, most people are like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And for her to compete, in her retirement piece in the Vogue story, she talked about how she tried to turn all the negativity into a positive, where she could hear somebody in the crowd saying something, some nobody in the crowd, and that would like fuel her to try to like do better or to dominate and crush her opponents or whatever. But that level of competitiveness, it's going to be really interesting to see how she transitions, because most players who have that, the Jeters, the Jordans, the Larry Birds, they don't transition very well, because nothing can replace that. Nothing else out there can duplicate what she's about to leave. So interested in seeing what she does next.
Howard, Mike and I love tennis as well, and I understand what you're saying. I love dominance. Mike and I really do love tennis. We love the sport. We love the history of the sport, and I get what you're saying about having a dominant player in that sport, but there's always someone next. Like, we said the same thing when Martina left and then Serena and Venus came along. We said the same thing about when Sampras left and then Federer came, and then Federer kind of faded out. And it was Novak Djokovic, Jack left, Tiger replaced him. Like, there's always going to be someone next, right?
Yeah, there's always going to be someone next. However, I will make an argument here, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this. It is harder to be a great player than ever today. Harder than ever. And the reason is because of you. The reason it's your fault. The reason is because today you get the attention of a champion. You get the money of a champion. You get the visibility and the endorsements of a champion without having to be a champion. You can make a ton of money in sports today and not win anything.
You're right.
You know, you can walk out of there. You know, Osaka's making $50 million a year. She's got four majors. Back then, those guys had to win to earn. You don't have to win to earn today. So I'm really looking forward. Obviously, yes, there are going to be tons of great players coming. There's always somebody next. When you think you're never going to see this again, somebody comes, because that's what happens. But the way that sports is set up today, you can check out of this real fast and make a boatload before you're competing. It's going to take that special person who has decided that they're going to compete against history. Instead of just playing for money or playing for attention, you're going to get all of that. You can get all of that without even winning a major, never mind 23 of them.
But it can't be disproven what you guys are saying, that someone always comes next. And I can argue, not like this, longer career than Tom Brady out of Compton, revolutionizing the sport, overwhelming body, staying with her for 30 years. Like, no, yeah. Man, we ain't going to see this again. You could go ahead and think that maybe you'll see it, but not like this. Not if you're going to give everyone $50 million a year and they don't have to win, people are going to gravitate toward the empire that she built.
That's 100%. And also, if you're going to add Venus in there as well, they are. You can throw Eli and Peyton in there. You can throw... You know, if you want to throw Randy Moffitt and Billie Jean King in there, be my guest. You can throw the Boone family, whoever you want. Or Venus and Serena are the greatest pair of siblings in the history of North American sports. And nobody's done what they did. No one's going to do what they've done. You know, I mean, and so you're right in terms of you think you're going to see greatness, but you're not going to see that again, in my opinion.
Howard, you got me thinking, because I too actually like dominance, and you held up the NFL as an example. I tell you that you actually see dominance in the NFL. It's the same guy, much like Serena, doing it over the course of 20 years. But in men's tennis, we see dominance, and it's dispersed almost evenly throughout three guys. They're rivals. We know that when we get to a final, we are going to see two at the absolute height of this sport. With Serena, I have a hard time trying to even figure out who her greatest rival is. Is it Venus?
Venus? No,
it's Venus. If you look at the records, Djokovic probably had the best record against her, and it was only a 40% success rate. So who was her greatest rival?
Her greatest rival was her sister. It's Venus. You got to go back 20 years, but it's those two. You go back to what they were doing in the early 2000s and the late 90s. They dominated the sport. They were both number one and number two. Venus has got seven majors. If it weren't for Serena, they would be like Chrissy and Martina. They'd be like 16 apiece or whatever. But you're looking at the way that those two had to push each other. You're looking at the way that and those matches were not always great matches, because there was so much emotion in between them. How do you play your sister in a major in front of 24,000 people? And so there's no doubt, if you go back to the more recent times, the last decade, for me, it's probably Azarenka, those back-to-back U.S. Open finals in 2012, 2013, I remember those two. You know, but really, she did not have a singular rival. What she did have, however, what was really sort of interesting was everybody trying to slay the beast. So you had these, and I don't want to say pretenders, but you had all of these players be good players and have good tournaments. And then they would have the match of their lives against Serena. You know, Kerber, match of her life against Serena. Muguruza, match of her life against Serena. Sam Stosur, match of her life against Serena. So Serena was the standard, and everybody was trying to live up to that. And it's going to, like, once again, and they were so ubiquitous, and Serena was so ubiquitous, that there were so many times where American media and the USTA, they would just sort of forget them. Like, they treat them like they're not even American. We're like, oh, when's the next American champion going to come? Well, you've had one for the last damn near 30 years.
Howard, what does she mean culturally?
Well, and then there's that. Then there's the other piece of it, which is, of course, the cultural piece, you know, during the Me Too era, during the era of equal pay, what Serena has meant, obviously, to Black women in the sport, women of color in the sport, fans in particular, who felt, you know, you want to talk about a beehive. Okay, Beyonce's got her group, but my goodness, criticize Serena on Twitter and Lord pray for what happens to you next. I mean, there really is she's a symbol of a lot of people who didn't feel heard, a lot of people who felt like they were being marginalized, and for, you know, Serena's victories were their victories. And so many cases, especially at the U.S. Open against Osaka, when they felt like she was being completely wronged. There was a lot of theater there that was based on a lot of emotions that didn't have a lot to do with tennis.
How poorly were they treated coming up?
Oh, they're treated terribly. I mean, you don't want them there. I remember 2012 Wimbledon. It's my first Wimbledon. I walk out, and there's Richard Williams sitting there. He used to smoke these little cigarettes like Moore's. Remember Moore's cigarettes? He used to smoke these really tiny little cigarettes. And he, you know, when,
that is when, not probably what they were used to at Wimbledon.
Exactly. It is old Richard Williams sitting there with his smoking. And when Richard ever saw somebody Black, right? He had to bring you over. Like, you had to come sit at Grandpa's knee, and he was going to tell you what it was. And he hadn't seen me before because I'd never been to Wimbledon before. He pulls me over, and we sit and we talk for like 45 minutes. And one of the first things he says is, you got to remember, they don't want us here. They've never wanted us here. And I told Venus, I told my girls, there's only one way for them to respect you, and that's win. If you win, they have to listen to you, and they can't get rid of you. And when you walk around the grounds at Wimbledon, you go through the stairwells, you go through the hallways, there's nothing but pictures of Venus and Serena because they won so many. She's got five, you know, Serena's got, what, eight of them? And so when you're looking at this from a motivational standpoint, from a historical standpoint, and just an emotional standpoint, they knew they were in hostile territory from day one, and they knew that the only way that they were going to navigate this hostile territory was to beat everybody's ass. And that's pretty much what they did.
Howard, I'm not sure how much of the Vogue article you've actually had the chance to read, but I did find interesting that she really doesn't seem like she wants to retire. She thinks that she could be Tom Brady, which she actually does mention Tom Brady in the piece. She says, maybe I'd be more of a Tom Brady if I had that opportunity, not being that she started a family and that she had a child and that it affected her performance, and her daughter wants a sister and wants to carry on. She could potentially be an even greater figure. And later on in the piece, she also talks about she's really struggled with it. She doesn't even want to use the word retire. Do you think that she's actually fully retiring from the game?
No, that was the other thing about this story. Like, when you read the headlines, it says Serena Williams suggests retirement. She's not completely gone yet, right? She's one of them. She don't know how to let it go. This is what she knows. And like, people are like, oh, when is... I understand the reflex of not wanting to watch your heroes get crushed, to not watch her get demolished, because that's eventually what's going to happen, because that's what happens to all of them. You can't play forever. But she's not ready to say goodbye. She doesn't want to quit. They don't know how to quit. This is what they've done. And you've done something like this since you were 12 years old or 6 years old, since you were playing. I mean, why would you let it go that easily, especially when you're her? You know, I've always asked the question, how long do you play? Like, what, you know, especially in an individual sport, are you comfortable? Now, Venus can do it, but are you comfortable going out there and getting knocked out in the second and third round? Serena's not doing that. Serena's not doing that. I mean, there's only three ways to retire. You know, the game retires you because you can't play anymore. Your body retires you because your body won't let you do it anymore. Or you go out on top. And very few people walk in door number three.
I actually appreciate that she doesn't want to go out like Venus is. It's a little different because Venus wasn't as dominant because of Serena. But to see what happened to Venus last night, I can't really imagine that happening to Serena. It's also kind of interesting for being such great rivals in their history. They face each other like 31 times, and they've had maybe three good matches.
All terrible.
They're all terrible. They don't really seem to enjoy playing each other, and we don't have those memorable matches between
Why
the two of them.
They enjoy playing each other.
I mean, it seems like one always checks out when the other person is very clearly got the good form going. There's always conspiracy theories about why those matches aren't really that good.
How insulting is that to say that one of them was tanking matches, one of the greatest competitors of all time? You really think she's
just giving voice to longstanding? There should not be. It is a little curious, Howard, that they only have had.
It doesn't seem like you're lending your voice.
I'm lending my voice to the conspiracy theories. It's flatly weird that arguably the two greatest tennis players of the modern era never really had good matches, despite playing each other plenty of times.
Name me a comparable experience where you're going up against a family member, and not only you're going up against a family member, but you guys are going to be partners in the doubles after the match.
But Howard, she's already gone through some of this. Like, she lost first round of Wimbledon. She lost early, Wimbledon. I think. I'm sorry about that. She lost early in a French Open recently. Like, she's gone through some of what Venus is going through right now. Like, she's done that.
When you get whooped by Harmony Tan, it's time to go.
Howard, I want to switch
gears.
Put
that on the poll. I mean,
I want to switch gears. I know you're obviously a big comic book guy. You're geared more towards Marvel, but there's some interesting things happening in the DC universe, and you and I are pretty aligned on how we feel about the mess that the DC universe has become. But it's even getting more messy now with Discovery entering the fray. They have already canceled one film in Batgirl, saving the company $90 million by just not releasing it. Because if they release it on HBO Max, that even though Warner Brothers owns it, they have to pay licensing fees, so they shelve it. So there's already one movie that Michael Keaton is playing Batman in that won't see the light of day. And all throughout these last few months, even prior to the merger, was the Flash movie that has been postponed and postponed while the star, Ezra Miller, has gone through it publicly. There are allegations that they are running a cult, that they have recently been arrested on felony burglary charges, all sorts of terrible stories surrounding them. So what do you make of Ezra Miller, and will we ever see Michael Keaton as Batman again?
He was better as in Birdman than Batman. I'll take Birdman. I have been trying, like most people, to make sense of this. And whenever I think of the DC universe, the only thing I can think of is, I just want to see all the checks. I mean, has there ever been another franchise launch that has just blown so much? I mean, the money is staggering here. I mean, and you know, and no disrespect to the actors, obviously, the stories just haven't been very, very good. They're not good at all. I mean, I will say, I think the Dark Knight Rises, I thought, was a spectacular movie. Everything else has just not been really good. I mean, if you're canceling movies, how does Wonder Woman 84 still exist in the universe? I mean,
saying that.
And I want to just give a big shout out to Dan, who seems to make no distinction between DC and Marvel in these intros. I love that about you. Personally.
That note, see you later, Howard. Good talking to you. Appreciate your passion about all of these things and your expertise. Appreciate it, sir. Bill Lawrence going to join us in studio next.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed. Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
One of the great benefits of being married is your wife's purse. You can put so much stuff in there.
I would hate to be your wife's purse. You walked in here the other day with silverware in a pocket.
That's right, because my wife wasn't here to put it in her purse.
Stugatz. Your wife must be amazed at what a child you are.
What do you mean?
Just your eating
How
habits.
How prepared I am, you need to say.
Your eating habits, the mess that your desk is.
Yeah, the mess that my desk is. I'd just like to say this right now. Every single person in here, every one of yous, has benefited from something that I've had underneath my desk. You think that I haven't give people spare socks before? Because you'd be wrong.
You're a hoarder.
I'm prepared.
Underwear.
Underwear. Chris wore my underwear once.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Our friend Bill Lawrence is in studio. He's in Miami here for a couple of months. He's wearing it. He's wearing
he
a
sure
little bit
is,
of
yes.
Miami. About a month too long in Miami.
You've yeah, it spent gets here. On you.
Yes.
Yeah.
What has your experience been just tasting this city, this weird city?
Well, in a normal city, like one day in Vegas is 100 days in other cities, but it's maybe Miami to Vegas is like 2-1 only. So it's rough, man.
So you've done 2 months of Vegas.
Yeah, you never. It comes from all sides. You know, it could be midday. You'd be talking to someone that looks like a housewife or a mom, and she's like 2:00. Maybe we should go get about 9 drinks. It's got that vibe.
Do you have a lot of armed people in and around wherever it is that you're staying?
I live over in South Beach in a condominium that you can tell. I think you can tell when the Russian oligarch are there because suddenly there's armed security guards. Yeah.
You could tell when they flood in to the and what have you noticed? What about your living arrangement? Have you ever tried this much Miami before?
No, I have not, man. And all my roots and my Florida roots are in Central Florida. You know, some over in Orlando and Winter Park. My parents went to college at Rollins, and then the rest of my family lives over in DeLand where Stetson is, you know. So Miami has only been a cup of coffee for me, and getting a firsthand view of it is like nowhere. I think you got to see it once, I don't know if you have to see it twice.
You're ready to leave, aren't you? You're ready to get the hell out of here, aren't you?
He's been ready for a month, yes. It's the same as you. You were afraid of South Beach because you were going to leave addicted to cigarettes and shit if
and
that
I'm
didn't
addicted.
Happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It got you, yeah.
Bad things happen here.
Exactly.
I should tell people, you could have chosen any project in the world after making Ted Lasso, and you came to Florida and did the Carl Hyacin novel and are almost done, I would assume.
Yeah, we're almost for the last couple weeks right now.
How do you feel about the project?
It's cool. You know, it's awesome experience. I love Carl. I loved actually shooting Florida for Florida. I wouldn't necessarily try it again. But the what a cool experience. Just there's no other state that looks like this. You can't fake it anywhere. Combination of Everglades is a half an hour away. South Beach is here, going out to the Keys. It's been pretty insane, you know, as far as it environmentally and the way it looks and stuff.
But have you ever had a budget like this to play with after that success, Apple Television? We were just talking before you came in here about how discerning Apple is with its choices and how they've set themselves up to be a different kind of streaming model that's going to do it differently than Netflix is doing it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because everything in entertainment, it lines up with what you guys are doing. It's a reaction, and Netflix... I'll end my career on Netflix yet again. That's all I do in this show is prevent myself from ever working on Netflix. They stopped kind of curating their brand a little bit. So it just seems there's good stuff on there, but it seems like, hey, are you interested in everything? And, you know, Apple is really kind of curates it like, hey, this is our brand. These are the type of shows we do. And if you like one of them, you'll probably like most of them. I think that kind of lines up with the stuff that you guys are doing too. You know, it's very easy to throw 9,000 things at a wall, but when I see the ancillary stuff you guys are doing, it all seems on brand. And I think Apple's doing that too.
Have you enjoyed it? Because I would feel a great burden of pressure. You're a creator who's created for a long time confidently, and you're a bit of a prodigy. But I would feel having to make the next thing after Ted Lasso, that would feel like pressure to me.
No, but only because I've been around long enough for the inevitable ups and downs. You know what I mean? Which is TV by nature is cyclical. I was hot and then cold and then hot and then cold, and I'm hot and I'll be cold again very soon. Eventually someone will say, hey, is Ted Lasso just Scrubs with different characters? And is he doing the same?
But you have expectations now. Like, people are expecting stuff from you.
Oh, but
right?
He's got the right attitude. If you're just, if you're making the shit you're making without pressure, God bless, you've arrived at a blissful, blissful place. Like, you still work for a corporation, right? Or you still have their people to answer to, but God almighty, this has to be the most creative liberation you've ever felt.
Yeah, without a doubt. Hey, look, it's one of the reasons I dig on this show is it feels like people doing what they want to do. And I have the luxury right now of getting to do what I want to do. And you know, it'll either work or it won't. But I've always just said, we used to joke around that I wanted to call it Noble Failure Productions, because if you can show this stuff to your friends and family without being mortified, you know, you can't really ask for anything. You can't control anything else, you know, whether people are going to care or not. But I think the show's good. I think, you know, and I've been a fan of Carl's for so long, and I know he's a fan of this show too, that just getting a chance to do that was really cool for me. It's like, oh, you read these books growing up, and now you get to turn one into a TV show. That was pretty badass.
I want to treat TV the way we treat sports, where you've had a hit show, but do it again, Lawrence, okay?
Yeah.
you got to do it again. Do you have any idea? Because I'd be interested in talking about the business with you. I find that you guys have such unique viewpoints as creators trying to make their way through the corporate labyrinth. Do you have any idea what you've done for Apple with Ted Lasso? Because that was the first one that got everyone's attention, is it not?
I do. And by the way, you're always nice to say me. I always have to take the time to go, Sudeikis crushed it. And, you know, the other creators, Joe Kelly, Brendan Hunt. But yeah, we all read an article that said, and someone can research here, but they put an article out that said that Ted Lasso is the number one show as far as causing new subscribers to get onto any of these sites. So it's kind of ended up being almost single-handedly responsible initially for the subscribers, a base of Apple, you know, just growing in a giant way.
What was your expectation at the start of that? It couldn't have been that.
I was just hoping, you know, like I do with every show, man, I just hope it doesn't make me look like an idiot. You know, and, you know, beyond that,
it's a very low bar.
Yeah. But you'd be surprised, man. Yeah. I always say that, one of the best things about my career is that the really, really, really awful shows I made, except for one, don't get on TV. Because you still often, you make, you know, the basements of these studios are littered with $5, $10, $15 million pilots that are so bad they can't put them on. I don't know if you guys, I don't know if this is the case, but you might have read that Warner Brothers made a huge feature out of Batgirl and just announced last week that they're not going to show it to anybody.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you about, where the industry is headed, what you see, because I thought Mike Schur had an illuminated perspective on it, and I imagine you would, too, from your vantage point.
Well, no matter what his perspective is, mine's going to be different because, you know, enough with Mike Schur. I mean, let's be honest.
I like that.
Yeah, fair enough. You know what? I don't need to mention it.
Maybe it wasn't that illuminated. It was a tame.
No, I think you can do better.
I'm sure Mike's insight was amazing.
You can do better. You can tell us what's happening in the.
You know, if you ask me a tough question, I'll call Mike up and ask what the answer is, just so I know. I want to keep this going so bad, man.
Please do.
Well, they hate each other. There, I said it. Okay, I want the audience to know. This guy, Lawrence, has been a nemesis of Mike Schur for many, many years. Everyone needs to know it because he's been you've been the wonder kid. But regardless, you don't worry, right? You've arrived at a place in your career that HBO Max shutting it down doesn't affect you, but it affects the industry, it affects people you care about, and it affects content because you can't take 70% of HBO Max and not gut the place.
Right. Look, one of the realities of entertainment is if you create content, you're always going to find a way. Okay. What's tough, really, all you're really talking about is what the compensation system ends up being. Because you guys know, they keep merging and all of entertainment becomes three or four companies, they're still all going to need content. The only thing people are going to get hammered on, I would imagine, is how little they get paid for doing stuff that they used to get paid, you know, a lot for. But content is king. So it doesn't bump me too much, this kind of ongoing treadmill of all these guys kind of sucking up the other companies and controlling what they put out there. I also think that no matter what they do, if you find something that breaks through, leverage shifts, and it's going to continue to be that way, whether it's a podcast, a book, a movie, TV shows. You know, the second that people are seeking that out, there's a leverage shift, and you just got to know how to use it.
Mr. Gods, Bill has come in with one of his sons, and I would describe this young man as foul to his core as a sports fan because it's about transactions and numbers.
My kind of kid.
The players are just commodities and assets, and they're just fantasy things to be traded and swapped, and I find him just generally offensive, even though I just met him.
Well, look, I'll give him props. Will, the guy that's here, is a baller. He and Tony had to guard each other a bunch, so I'll let Tony say how that went, because
Will's a sniper.
Yeah, he's good.
Really? He had a game where he hit like five or six threes from deep, too.
But you're better, right?
I mean, I'm not going to say that.
I will say this. Obviously. I'll say this to embarrass my son. He was shooting lights out, and the nice guy that runs that game,
Chris.
Chris said, Will, you got to keep that guy from driving. And this is in a pickup game, and Will said, they don't pay me to play defense.
In a pickup game.
This guy gets it.
But he looks at sports all wrong. And you've been arguing about Kevin Durant all day.
Well, look, this guy, my youngest son, looks at sports wrong because my youngest son, who Dan, you guys have seen on Zoom, he follows, it's fantasy. So it's whoever's on his fantasy. There's no real teams. This guy is the opposite side of the coin a little bit. Although, and you've talked about it here, he does one thing I don't like. He does us a lot, like we, you know, the Clipper. We have a great chance to do it this year. He's, whatever team he likes, he's on the team.
What's wrong with that?
It drives me crazy, man. He's not on the team.
You didn't raise him right. That's a failure. That's a reflection on you every time that he does it. But what have you been arguing about Durant?
We've been arguing about Durant because I really liked it. It came out, I'm sure you guys saw, it came out that Durant said, you know, it's either me or Nash and the GM's Marks, yeah?
Yeah, Marks. Sean Marks.
And the owner supported his management. And I'm like, oh, good. And my son actively thinks it's a monster mistake. And it's all about the players, and it should be whatever Durant wants.
He's right.
All right.
But it has been everything Durant wants.
And yeah, how's that going?
Yeah, it's not going very well. And that was leaked yesterday. Like, nobody knows the contents of that meeting. So when I read Shams saying it's either me or them, like, Durant's putting that out there. They're not going to put that out there.
No, he wants it out there.
Yeah. He wants it out there. It's a good move to force exactly what happened, which is Josiah coming out, having to publicly back his head coach and GM, and now he can continue to force his way because he obviously wasn't happy with the time this was taking. It was an alpha move from Durant. He was also curious ESPN's lack of reporting on it because it wasn't broken by their reporter. All of it was really interesting. And the fact that there isn't a massive Nets fan base is the only reason why we're just now talking about it, because what Kevin Durant is doing is nuking that franchise.
Yeah.
It is all him. He is in the bed that he made.
Well, it started
right
with Kyrie, Mike.
He's in the bed that he made.
He signed a year ago today. He signed 4 years, $200 million a year ago today.
Doesn't like the direction of the franchise. He was in on this. You made the franchise.
He is the direction of the franchise.
No, but I think what happened is he thought playing with Kyrie was a good idea and then realized along the way, hey, not such a good idea. He doesn't want these things the way I want these things.
Has he?
I think
he still
Kevin Durant's been there and been healthy for the playoffs. Kyrie's missed them.
It's everybody else's fault, but he doesn't understand that it all went the direction that he wanted. Kyrie's got a Kyrie. That's part of the evaluation.
But you're the Nets, and you have Kevin Durant.
Like, you're the Nets.
You get rid of the coach, you get rid of the GM. You've never had a player like Kevin Durant.
You're saying, but you're the Nets. Don't you think with the shift to Brooklyn and the money they had, they were set up to succeed like no other franchise in a long time?
100%.
And they just pooped the bed, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a Sixers fan, so I guess you like to see it, right?
Yeah, I love to see it. I've been hassled before. I'm a lifelong Sixers fan.
You're more of a tampering guy.
What's that? Yeah, yeah. Oh, thank you. I don't believe that. That never happened.
But if Durant wanted to go to the Sixers and said, get rid of Doc Rivers, would you be okay getting rid of Doc Rivers?
Yeah, he's... Do I think Doc Rivers is a good X's and O's coach? Or do I think Doc is a good player coach? I don't know.
What if Durant says, get rid of Maury?
I mean,
well, let's do it this way. Mike, you hate the Sixers. He represents their fan base. Yes. You think the Sixers are raging frauds. They don't have the history that the Miami Heat
do. They barely have any.
He's got to go back to Mo Cheeks and Daryl Dawkins.
I'm old enough that I can go Mo Cheeks, Andrew Toney, Bobby Jones, yep. Caldwell Jones, Daryl Dawkins. And
it's amazing that you...
Chocolate Thunder.
I'm happy that you can remember a Philadelphia 76ers championship.
It was that long ago.
It did not happen.
I don't know if LeBron
lifetime.
Was playing back then, but we didn't buy him for championships. We just did it.
You bought Moses Malone.
I don't know. I'm blocking that out. Wait, was he the one that said 4-4-4?
Yes, that is the one. Moses. That's the last time Philadelphia won is 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I was born in 1985. Yeah. Never in my life have they. They've made it to one final.
Iverson single-handedly took him to the final against the Lakers. They won the first game. He stepped over, the head coach.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's kind of like a title, right?
That was your title moment, isn't it?
By the way, I was at that game, and I could not have told people more that the Sixers are going to win in 6 or 7.
You were walking out of game one. I felt so good, right?
Yes, he's irrationally strutting out of game one.
Every basketball season, I dread it. Is this the year they're finally going to make it past the second round? And thankfully, the Sixers always Sixer.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, one of these years you'll be right.
What's the other option?
Come hell or high water or private sponsorship deals with gambling entities that owners have divested themselves from the NBA for.
It's all so bad.
What I love so much is they were the ones that lodged a complaint on the Kyle Lowry stuff last year. And now they've done this.
Bill, that was your comeback. Your comeback is one of these two teams has actually paid a penalty for tampering.
I know.
Multiple times.
Oh, yours is coming.
It's coming. A. B, look.
Get that second round pick ready.
If you're a true Philadelphia fan, because I lived outside of Philly when I was a kid, and my dad took me. I'm a fan of the whatever team I saw first live. And it was the Phillies, Sixers. Flyers, but the first football team I saw was the Dolphins. But the Phillies, at least for a long time, were doing it right. And I don't know if you, because one of the things my sons grew up with was the Phillies were one of those teams that actually kept their core of Rollins and Utley and Ruiz and the Flying Hawaiian and kept that core together and actually won a couple times. I mean, they had to go get Halladay, but, you know, they did it right. And I wouldn't necessarily go to the mat saying the Sixers are doing it right.
James Harden, though, you like better in the player empowerment stuff. Durant's nuking one franchise while Harden is doing wink, wink discount deals so that they can tamper with PJ Tucker.
Oh, it's so hard to love Harden, man.
Isn't it? That one's got to be a mind blink for people.
Did you see Harden and Kevin Durant in London celebrating with Travis Scott? Like, they're best buds again. This is such a weird thing. Like, Kevin Durant does not want to pay any of the ramifications for his own decisions.
Well, he doesn't have to, though. But
he doesn't want to suffer consequences.
No, but he doesn't have to. To me, it's not that he doesn't want to suffer consequences. May we all arrive in a place at work where we're so valuable that there are no consequences. Like, now, because he doesn't care about the tatters, he doesn't have to care about the image anymore. It's not about, I'm going to sell sneakers like LeBron. I'm going to be second place throughout all of this, and I've sort of destroyed whatever it is that doing the right way is. And so now, everyone still wants him, and he has all the power after nuking them. He's nuked them.
I could never. It is a level of shamelessness, and I'm actually jealous of how little Kevin Durant cares, because looking at this wreckage in your rearview mirror of what you've done to this Nets franchise, if I were in Durant's shoes, I would just keep my head down. I'd push through. I'd try to find a way. I'll make it work with Simmons. Like, I made my bed. I picked this GM. I picked this coach. I picked these teammates. Yeah. I could never make a public mess of it. No consequences for Kevin Durant. In fact, his Q rating's probably gone up throughout all this.
There are consequences. He just doesn't care about those consequences. Like, he's never going to be looked back at as one of the all-time greats. He won't.
That's not true.
That's not true. Dan, that's the truth. No one's going to sit here 15 years from now talking about top five NBA players of all time and include Kevin Durant in that conversation. It's not happening.
I mean,
you don't think they'll talk about him like they do Marino, as a guy that was one of the best scorers of all time, as opposed to one of the best pure passers of all time?
I think if you played out his career 100 times, this might be the worst version of it. Seriously, because he is that good. And
that's
never won a title in Oklahoma City, jumped on a bandwagon Golden State, and has destroyed this. Like, this is about as poorly as it could have gone, given how absolutely incredible at basketball he is.
I don't think anybody would call his career a disappointment, though.
I think it is.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it definitely
because
is.
Because he's so talented, Dan.
You guys believe that a guy who's never existed before at that height, who is going to be remembered, no matter what you say now, as one of the best scorers anybody has ever seen, you believe that people going forward don't think he's every bit as great as he is? Like, that if he won, how many championships do you have to have him winning before you accept that
he's... Well, he's negative two right now, so he's got about eight to go before he catches Jordan.
I don't. And the narrative on his time in Golden State,
you think
just
his
flipped.
Career is a disappointment. Kevin Durant.
Yes, because he's so talented. That's why.
He won two titles. With one Steph Curry Finals MVP run recently, I think the narrative on his time in Golden State has flipped a little bit. In my opinion, Kevin Durant is the second best player to come into the league since the time of Jordan. I think he's better than Shaq. I think he's better than Kobe. I think he's better than all of those guys. He just so happens to play in LeBron James's era, and he's made poor decision after poor decision that has hurt his own legacy. And the Brooklyn thing is chief among them.
I don't know how you are one of the best historic ever and a disappointment. You've placed the expectations for me in a place
because you've made lousy decisions.
I've got a good bet. My bet would be, because the thing that's been freaking me out about sports is how quickly the narrative shifts. And I bet you Durant has a turnaround on his story within a calendar year.
But to Mike's point, he's saying stay with the Nets. That's the best possible chance. Depending on which
team he goes to, I might agree with you.
Yes, I'm speaking in generalities. I've noticed when people bottom out in this level of sports.
And perhaps you'll be right.
I made an argument for third greatest player of all time just now. Yeah, no. When most people are taking Curry over him.
It's aggressive.
Culture.
I love these stupid arguments where Mike James gets dragged, okay, because he says Steph Curry not in top five for me, too one-dimensional. And not top five right now. He's not saying ever. He's saying there are five players better than him. And I know that everyone dragged Mike James as who the bleep is Mike James. But I thought to myself, he did change the entire sport. But those other five guys, they're really great too. And if the line here on whether you're historically great or not is Stugatz's top five, will I place you in my top five?
15 years from now. Okay.
That's a huge metric. Yeah.
It's a hard one. You will be able to forever say Kevin Durant's not in my top five, but I don't think I'll be able to say it.
No, you'll be able to say it, Dan. It'll be you and I on rocking chairs out on a patio. show doing, you know, we're not doing a show live, but we're still doing a show because we're always doing show. We'll talk top five NBA players. You'll realize then Kevin Durant is not one of them.
All right, let's close out the segment here with top five ways to measure things. Top five, number five, Mike Ryan.
This is the top five ways to rank things. Number five is GOAT status.
Excellent.
Is something the GOAT or not? That is number five. Number four on this list, a totem pole.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The bottom is the best, right?
We don't know.
Yeah, we actually did. Well,
the bottom is the top.
I think the bottom is the top.
It was co-opted, and now that top of the totem pole is the most important, but if you actually do the research, bottom of the totem pole is the most crucial to the actual totem pole.
Did you know that, Bill Lawrence? Did you want to be on top of the totem pole or at the bottom of the
bottom? I want to be on the top of the totem pole.
You want to be on the bottom.
You want to be on the bottom.
That's not true, but go ahead.
Number three.
Wants to be in the middle.
This guy gets it.
Number three, medal stand.
Excellent.
Bronze, silver, and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Mount Rushmore.
Excellent.
And number one, top five list.
Oh, not rings.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.